Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along. Joe Malloy with you this evening. Sam Bennett has capped off a memorable few weeks in his life on the Champs-Élysées yesterday afternoon. We'll bring you his interview from OTBAM this morning with Jaron Owen. Less fun for Leinster and Ulster at the weekend. Stuart Barnes and Liam Toland with us just after 8 o'clock. No Irish side in the semi-finals for the fourth time this century. And then the football show. Gold bonanza in the Premier League. We had 39 in 8 games over the weekend. Merseyside feeling pretty happy. Some reflection maybe ongoing around Old Trafford and Stamford Bridge. Man City play Wolves tonight at 8 o'clock. We'll have Pat Nevin on the show after 9. Also on the football show, Stephanie Roach will talk Ireland against Germany. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. You are very welcome. Ronan Mullen, by the way, will also fill us in on injuries aplenty this weekend in the NFL. And if you're looking for some US Open talk, we have no room tonight. But fear not, Bryson fans. Paul McGinley is locked in for tomorrow evening. So Paul McGinley will talk US Open on tomorrow night's show. There is just too much sport to get through. Richie McCormack, good evening.
Joe, how are you?
Very well. Adrian Barry, hello to you.
Welcome back, Joe.
So hit us, Adrian. What caught you over the weekend?
Well, I tell you something. I don't know if news has reached winged foot yesterday or wherever the hell he's, or today, wherever he's found himself today. But no room for the golf. Wow. I mean, the ultimate snob. I'm sure once he gets wind of it, he's going to be, this will be another one for the black book of Bryson DeChambeau. I'm shocked, Joe.
I almost stormed out of our production meeting.
I can well imagine.
Not impressed.
I'm surprised you're here at all.
it's under serious duress, but here we are anyway. It's not every day, I guess, someone wins the green jersey for Ireland. So Sam Bennett was on OTBAM this morning with Jaron Owen, 7:30 every morning on all our social channels. So we thought we'd bring you some of that around 7:30 or so. And also, Adrian, it's not every day Leinster lose a match this season. In fact, Saturday was the first. Boy, did they lose that first half.
Oh my God, it was like it's just not what you expect when you're looking at that team. I will say, and I'm on record having said this on OTBAM over the last few weeks, like they weren't really hitting their straps in the way that you expect Leinster's season since they came back since the lockdown. Like one of the best performances they put together was from the B team against Ulster, which was like Leinster Light, obviously. Leinster's B team against Leinster Light a few weeks ago. But you just don't expect to see that level of underperformance of them. And you know, like the game was done at halftime, wasn't it? But even for all that, then they stormed back into it. And I thought they were actually going to go ahead and win this thing now. But yeah, it just wasn't. And they're, do you know what? Like that Saracens group are so unlikable as well. That really was not helping things. They're not a team that afterwards you were given the old cliche and you were like, oh, you've done well now. Go on ahead and win it. You were like, I really hope you get stuffed in the semi-final.
Mm. Leo Cullen used the word spooked several times about Leinster's performance in the first half. I mean, I guess you would be if your scrum is being annihilated for a start. 7 penalties at the scrum. And then just a general sense again that we were watching another of these Anglo-Irish affairs, be it Ireland or Leinster and Sarries or England. And Irish teams of late are struggling to cope. And the scoreboard pressure again, I mean, the Pro 14 is just too easy for Leinster. Maybe that is a factor here. An exchange of early penalties and then Saracens build that pressure. 9 minutes they go 6-3 up, 13 minutes they're 9-3 up, 25 minutes they're 12-3 up. Suddenly after half an hour they're 15-3 up and Leinster are in a bit of bother, and then the good try happens and boom, as you said, it's game over at half time. And it's a really strange one for us to try and analyse, because Leinster were beaten in the European Cup final last year by Saracens. They go and win 25 odd matches. And then this is the first, you would have to say, the first real test again. And they lose in really disappointing fashion. And, you know, we spend so many weeks here where Leinster's B team wins a Pro 14 match, you know, and Josh van der Fleer has 1,000 tackles and they just all look brilliant and they're on the front foot and they're comfortable. Or, you know, even in the group stages of the European Cup, Northampton come to the Aviva, they're not interested, they get trounced, you know, with 30, 40 points on the board. And, you know, we're sitting here going, geez, can Leinster get any better? And is it the Crusaders? Is it Leinster? Who's the best team in the world? I don't know. And there may just be, and I know Stuart Barnes is of this opinion, and we'll talk to him after 8 o'clock, Adrian, there may just be a level of delusion when it comes to just how well Leinster go against cannon fodder in the Pro 14 at the moment.
It's a fascinating question, and part of the massive difficulty I have with all of this thing is that Saturday's game marks the end now of this rivalry, and that's, I think, the biggest frustration for everybody, whether you're involved in the team or not, that Saracen team is gone now, effectively. Like, they're disappearing off the face of the planet from a European perspective for the next 2 years. So we're not going to get to see that rivalry. Like, I don't really buy them. Are Leinster at this level? Are they really, like, the Saracens are a cut above? Like, I'm not sure. You are talking about the two best teams in Europe, really, aren't they, over the last sort of 5 or 6 seasons?
Yeah.
Like, everybody is, look, who knows what happens from here, but everybody was very much accepting. Everybody I spoke to, that the final, that was the final, really. But the biggest frustration of the whole thing is that that's the elite from the Gallagher Premiership, and the elite of the Pro 14, and the elite of the Pro 14 couldn't live with them. And they're going to, like, that has to be a fact now for, like, whatever discussion comes up over the next 2 years until Saracens get their house back in order, or, you know, another team emerges from England that are just as powerful. Could another team emerge from England that are just as powerful? But that argument sits in your back pocket all the time about, well, look at, that's the most recent evidence, and that can't be expunged at any point over the next few years. And that's hugely frustrating.
Yeah, and Leo Cullen said afterwards, it's certainly an anti-climax. What a weird season. 23 wins, 1 defeat. They've got a new season in 13 days' time. So there we go. Saracens win that trilogy, win that rivalry, 2-1. Rich, what caught you over the weekend?
Sam Bennett, yesterday. When they rounded, like, he talked this morning, and we'll get to the clip, about the chills that he had coming down the Champs-Élysées for the first time in that first lap. It was when that peloton first, they rode through the grounds of the Louvre, and then, like, one of the main riders, I can't remember, it wasn't Sagan, but it might have been one of the climbers, just put his arms out and said, like, this is amazing, like, to actually get this far, and to actually get the tour on the road in a country like France that had been hit, like, it had been had during the crisis, was amazing. And for him to have ridden like he did in the past 3 weeks, to have taken stage victories over somebody who has won the green jersey on 7 occasions, I think 7 out of the last 8 years, and become the first Irishman since 89 to win a jersey of any hue. Like, I don't think people probably in this country even grasp the scale of what Bennett has achieved over the course of the last while. He spoke this morning about how one of the main tasks that he has is trying to finish within the time limit pretty much every day, because obviously enough, he can't just canter over these mountains and take it easy for a day. He has to finish within a certain time of the leader every day, and his teammates at the CUNY Quickstep made sure that happened. And he put himself in an amazing position from the first week, pretty much, to go and beat Peter Sagan, who's without doubt the best sprinter of his generation, in the biggest race of, you know, cycling at the moment. It's an incredible story.
It's where you start your news round, which we should kick off and bring people up to date. It is thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters, and the president was leading the tributes, Rich.
Yeah, President Michael D. Higgins led the congratulations for Sam Bennett yesterday, the Carrick on Shore rider, becoming the first rider since Sean Kelly in 1989 from Ireland to win the Tour de France green jersey. With victory already secured before the end of yesterday's final stage, Bennett put the icing on the cake with victory itself on the Champs-Élysées, and he told OTBM it was a special day even before he crossed the finish line.
Just wearing it coming onto the Champs-Élysées when we entered for the first lap, I got goosebumps, you know, to be a sprinter. Wearing the green jersey coming into the final sprint in the Tour de France is something amazing. And then when I got the intermediate points, I think it was 3 laps to go, and I knew I had the green jersey, that was a special moment. But it was within the race, so nobody really got to see that side of it. And then I had to switch my focus again and go for the sprint.
That's Sam Bennett. We'll bring you some more of that interview from OTBAM this morning around 7:30 or so. from Luke. Imagine being in the Saracens team going into the game knowing they basically just needed to show up, flex their muscle, win the scrum, and job done, they're in the semi. That sort of simplicity must breed such confidence. Michael wonders, in a situation like this, does Adrian claim Westmeath is far enough away to ditch his Leinster blue-tinged glasses and jump on the good ship Connacht? Wonders Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all in. Come on, go Connacht.
You and Robbie Henshaw.
There's an ongoing dispute between me and some of my mates at home, who some of whom are further into Leinster than I am, and most of them are Connacht fans, because the Buccaneers club, which is like, you could literally have thrown a good stone from my house into it, is part of the Connacht thing, and Robbie Henshaw is not that far away either. But listen, I'm from Westmeath. It's in Leinster. I support Leinster, and that's the way it'll be, Joe.
It's the only.
Does Mark McCall get the due he deserves over in this side of the water for what he's done with that Saracen side?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, pre-Saracen's financial cheating story, probably not. Post the financial cheating story, I think that has affected the legacy, has it not?
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, before that, no. Like, he was never really one that was, but maybe it was just that he was so far entrenched with Saracens, but he was never spoken about when the big gigs were coming up over here. Like, he's still not spoken about in that regard. And I think Joe is absolutely spot on that it all comes with a giant asterisk now.
Lads, Brad Barrett, Jamie George, the Vunipolas, Rhodes, munching Leinster, delicious, says John in Limerick. Not surprisingly.
No, Shane
and Kevin, come on, Joe, just finally call it. Irish rugby as a whole is not good enough. Shane, this is me officially calling it. Irish rugby, as a whole, is not good enough. There, I've done it, Adrian. I'm on the record.
I don't think that's right. Like, I mean, that's just such a... People want to draw these massive conclusions about, like, Irish... Even, like, I don't know, let's not bring up the World Cup, but, like, there's a lot of losers and there's only one winner, and it's fairly difficult to do. Like, look at that Leinster team. I sort of argue this at every... point over the course of the season, but, like, it's possible that Leinster team are the... I say this like at the Premier League of the weekend that they've been dumped out of the Heineken Cup, but
yeah, I wouldn't
there's
say
a strong possibility that they are going to be like the greatest team that Ireland has ever seen, right? That is a strong possibility. And if what was his name, Billy from Limerick,
Shane and Kavanagh,
yeah, well, like if Ireland rugby is underachieving and that's the benchmark, bring it on.
Yeah, it's probably not the best Monday to be making that claim, Adrian, but I think generally I kind of hear what you're saying. I mean, you couldn't say Irish rugby is on the crest of a wave post-World Cup either, though, could you? I mean, the two most recent barometers, you have Munster not making the knockout stages, Ulster, I think knockout stages, quarterfinals, about par for the course there. That's a reasonable season, but I mean, look at the gap, like they were just so easily trounced by Toulouse. They're a million miles off being ever, you know, able to challenge a French side in France. And then Leinster, second time in a row when it really matters, have been really comprehensively beaten by Saracens. And I think the Newcastle defeat was comprehensive as well, even though Leinster disagree with that, I know, when their players talk about it. And then the last time we saw Ireland was at Twickenham. And again, that was annihilation. So, I mean, you couldn't say it's crest of a wave stuff.
No, well, you couldn't say that. I do think that we're been badly let down by the other provinces at the minute. Like, I mentioned jokingly about Leinster Light earlier on, but, like, they're being totally propped up by the talent that's pouring out of that Leinster team. Like, and do you know, there's a part of me that this sounds even more ridiculous now, and anybody who's sort of like, I certainly wouldn't consider myself to be from a traditional rugby background, so I don't fall into that category, so I feel okay with making this point. But like, even part of me looking at the game on Saturday felt really positive for, I mean, maybe Ryan Baird specifically, but for some of the players and talent that's coming through there. The international season is very difficult to draw any conclusions about because we don't know where the hell we're at.
Rich, football this evening?
Yeah, plenty of it as well. They're into the second half and, in fact, approaching the hour mark at Villa Park, where it's still Aston Villa 0, Sheffield United 0. United had John Egan sent off after just 12 minutes for grappling with Ollie Watkins as he looked through one-on-one on goal, and also saw a John Lundstrom penalty saved by Villa's new keeper, Emi Martinez. Scoreless, it remains, coming towards the hour mark. Manchester City's Premier League campaign begins at 8:15. They've got a tricky test away to Wolves to start off with, and no Ilkay Gundogan for City after the German midfielder tested positive for COVID-19. Shamrock Rovers looking to re-establish an 8-point lead at the top of the SSE Airtricity Premier Division this evening. A 7 o'clock start there was at Tallaght Stadium. Just checking the score there, and it's still scoreless between Rovers and Waterford FC. 4 games tonight in the first division. The leaders Bray are away to Cove. 3rd place Cabin Teely host Galway, and 4th place UCD are away to Longford. Elsewhere, Wexford host Athlone, and all 4 of those games kick off at 7:45.
Yeah, the John Egan sending off was very soft. Jamie Carragher was livid about it at halftime. We'll obviously keep you up to date on City against Wolves. Pat Nevin and Stephanie Roach with us between 9 and 10. DeChambeau then, Rich?
Yeah, he says his US Open win goes some way to proving he's not just a one-trick pony. The big-hitting American topped the field at wing foot on 6 under par, 6 shots clear of Matthew Wolff. Rory McIlroy had to contend himself with a tie for 8th, finishing the weekend on 6 over par. DeChambeau was asked afterwards if he feels he's changing the game of golf.
I think I'm definitely changing the way people think about the game. Now, whether you can do it, that's a whole different situation. You know, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be hitting it far. Matthew was hitting it plenty far today. A couple putts just didn't go in for him today, and kept the momentum on my side. So he's definitely got the firepower and the strength to do it. You know, you got to be looking out for him in the future. There's a lot of young guns that are unbelievable players, and I think that this generation, this new next generation is coming up into golf. Hopefully we'll see this and go, hey, I can do that too.
Adrian, I know you're partial to the golf. Did you watch any of Bryson?
Yeah, I watched a good bit of it yesterday. Like we've discussed it before, I am partial to the golf. I'd rather see a bit of drama, or I'd rather see somebody implode on that final day. And I was hoping, I've nothing against the chap. I don't particularly like the type of golf that he plays. And I was actually just thinking as that clip was playing, that probably just puts me in the old man category, doesn't it? That just, like, maybe this is what people love to see these days, like players just bombing up the courses. But I turned it on more hoping that he was going to implode at some point. And even, like, the Wolff thing, what did it last, half a round?
Yeah.
What did you make of it, Joe? Was it like... You're a thoroughbred, a blue blood golfing aficionado.
The last hour it was very slow, and you know, he was so clearly ahead. There was no drama, so I think people kind of in their droves switched off the last hour. But I mean, like, what he has done here is extraordinary. You know, it really is. And Paul McGinley's called him a pioneer. And it's not just about the length, you know. He emerges on the scene with the single length shafts. Again, that's very unusual. Putting, his style is totally his own. You know, he was putting front on with a compass until that was banned. You know, and you know, we're told putting is, you know, feel and light touch. His is rigid and mechanical. And again, he's doing it his own way. And then the weight gain as well. The bulk, 340 yards average after tee. He is, in fairness, not a lot of people seem to like him, and he probably lacks a bit of self-awareness, but he is resolute, because golf, if nothing else, will guarantee bad days. And so on those days, it's very easy to seek advice. And it's easier still when you're not just taking the road less traveled, you are just doing something nobody has done. And worse again, everybody is telling you this won't work, and you're still sticking to your guns. So post-lockdown, he emerges with all this length, as well as, you know, the single length shafts and his quirky, you know, his swing and all the various aspects. And he emerges with all this length post-lockdown. And the, I don't want to say the absolute consensus in the game, but certainly a majority in the game said, well, you won't be able to control this length on a golf course. And pretty quickly he wins on the PGA Tour. And then the same cabal say, yeah, okay, you can win on the PGA Tour. This isn't going to work on a proper, you know, major setup. Definitely not a US Open. And he goes and trounces the field. I mean, he was the only player under par. He won by 6 shots. And even, you know, in his press conference on Wednesday, he was asked, you know, for his strategy. Because if you can imagine how the press conference works with player after player after player coming in, they had all said, you know, chimed off the same US Open cliche, which is, well, I got to find fairways. And so DeChambeau comes in, and the first question is, well, you know, Bryson, I presume for this week you're not going to be silly enough to think you can just hit the ball a gazillion miles, because you'll be in this rough which is 10 inches deep. And honestly, he couldn't have summed up what was going to happen better. He said, well, no, I am, because I'm going to get so far down there that I'll be able to get a wedge on the ball and get that to the green. And actually, you know, there'll be a bunch of guys who'll try and play smart and lay up and still won't hit the fairway, and they'll be in the rough with a 4 or 5 iron and they're screwed. So I'm better off getting it down there, I'll wedge it on, I'll rely on my short game, and that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, a lot of people were like, this is foolish, this won't work. You know, even McIlroy afterwards was saying, if you had told me beforehand that DeChambeau was going to hit 23 of 56 fairways, it's impossible to win. You know, he's just proven so many kind of accepted wisdoms about the game completely wrong. And by all accounts, he wants to put on another 10 pounds before Augusta, and he's going to play with a 48-inch driver next week. The average is about 44, so he's planning on hitting this thing further and further and further. And again, look, you wrap all of that up in a bow, Adrian. Like, it's unbelievably impressive.
Is the dislike of him isn't just related to the brand Bryson stuff, is it? It obviously predates that.
It's definitely his personality is a big part of it, you know. He lacks a bit of self-awareness, I think. He can be a bit passive-aggressive with the rules officials. He's had one or two moments, like he was in a playoff with some guy who, you know, wouldn't be a big name, and that guy beat him, and it was the biggest, you know, moment of his career, and DeChambeau could barely shake his hand. You know, he's such a bad loser. And so, you know, there's an arrogance about him and all that stuff. And I think a lot of people don't like the aesthetics of his golf, for sure. Mm-hmm. So, you know...
That's horrible.
Would look at it and say, yeah, if this is golf, sign me out, you know.
Yeah. The book stuff, like traipsing around the green, look at it this way, look at it that way, look at the book, look back, take it up. Like, I don't know. I am your absolutely typical casual golf fan. I'm in for the majors, the Irish Open, Rory's competing. I watch a fair bit of it.
Yeah.
And I watched it last night, but it was like, I was second screening and I wasn't going to be sitting there giving that my full attention. And if that's the way golf is going, Joe, you can have it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I take that point. You're an artist. You're an artist, Adrian. You want freedom of expression. Let me put it, last point in all this, we'll talk to, like, I'm really interested to see what Paul McGinley thinks tomorrow. But even if you take, like, the most visually traditional, beautiful golfer, like a Louis Westhuizen, you know, he's 5'7" and, you know, barely looks like he's swinging. When he won his major at St. Andrews by, like, 10 shots or whatever, that was incredibly boring because he was so comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, it might whet your appetite if you had Bryson and Rory in the final group and there was a shot in it all the way and it was to-ing and fro-ing and, anytime a golf tournament is won so comfortably, it's never a brilliant watch. So, let's see what he does at Augusta. I mean, that's going to be nuts what he does.
It was more to do, has this changed the game?
No.
Whereas, like, Westhuizen was like a runaway leader and everybody can tell it was a one-off thing. So, yeah, it felt to me, Joe, I don't know if it was like there was a lot of conversations about, well, if this is the way that this is changing the game, this is going to change the game. And like there was a lot of very ungenerous commentary towards my felt.
Yeah.
Like it was all a very begrudging tone, hadn't it? Like from everybody, really.
No, it was. I think that's very unfair. Like his short game was unbelievable. He putted better than anybody, chipped better than anybody, his irons were better than anybody. You know, from the hole out, he was better than everybody. And yes, there's the driving. But I mean, the guy's some of his escape shots were off the charts. Like, he put it this way. He beat Rory by 10 shots, but Rory took 12 more putts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he destroyed the field with his putter. So it's absolutely, I mean, to say, oh, he hit the ball further and that's why he won. I can understand if you didn't watch last night and you're reading about it, you think that's the case. But honestly, his deftness around the greens was phenomenal. Like, he was better putter than Rory. He's better chipper than Rory. So it's definitely not just the bombing. Anyway, Rich, where are we going next?
You made up for the lack of biting tonight, Joe.
Yeah.
Aston Villa have just taken the lead, I should mention, at home to Sheffield United. It was a Conor Hourihan corner that was flicked on by Tyrone Mings, met again by the head then of Ezri Konsa, who nodded into the Sheffield United net to give them a 1-0 lead. Shamrock Rovers hitting the side netting in the past few moments against Waterford through Graham Burke, and scoreless it remains in Tallaght. Ulster GAA have reiterated the association's message that no spectators should enter the field of play following games. The statement comes in the wake of Dungannon's emotional win in the Tyrone Senior Football Championship final on Sunday. Dungannon Clark's penalty shootout victory over Trillick was the club's first senior title in 56 years, prompting understandably wild celebrations among the club members. Northern Ireland's First Minister Arlene Foster was among those to call on Ulster GAA to act upon those scenes.
For just a moment, I thought you were going to say she was amongst those running onto the pitch.
Front and centre, scarf around the head. Loving life.
She's a GAA fan, you know, we know this.
Yeah, she absolutely is. Yeah, she's a convert.
Any last story you want to bring us then?
Robbie Brady, a doubt for the Republic of Ireland's Euro 2020 playoff with Slovakia next month. The winger taken off 5 minutes from halftime in Burnley's defeat to Leicester on Saturday. His manager, Sean Dyche, says Brady is suffering from bruised ribs sustained initially while on international duty. And I guess to rub salt into those Leinster wounds, finally, Saracens flanker Michael Rhodes has been cited for allegedly striking Robbie Henshaw with his head. The incident in question happened in the first minute of Saracens' win on Saturday. Rhodes will face a disciplinary panel tomorrow and could miss their semi-final with Racing if he's found guilty. The 32-year-old went on to put in a man-in-the-match performance in Sarri's 25-17 win at the Aviva.
Ferguson Dublin, lads, I'm not having this rubbish if Sarri's been miles ahead. For Saracens, read Man City, PSG or Leipzig. They bought all around them. They broke the rules. They took relegation rather than let the authorities look at their finances. They are corrupt. I hope they get stuffed. It is bad for rugby if they win the Heineken Cup. They should be stripped of it anyway, says Ferguson Dublin. And Pat, lads, Bennett, incredible. Saturday's time trial, amazing TV. One of the greatest stages ever on the tour. We're going to get to Sam Bennett in just one moment. He's coming your way after the break. Adrian Barry, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Richie McCormack, as ever.
God bless.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.